Good afternoon. Welcome to a special edition of And That's the Game. Yes, that is correct. It is a Wednesday night, but it has been one absolutely wild day in sports. We just had to come on the air, go ahead and release this special edition of And That's the Game podcast presented by Anchor.fm. Matt Gillis with you here in the Sports Fanbase Network Studios, Rhode Island. We are also out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, so many different platforms. We thank you all very much, everyone who tuned in for the very first episode that we had on last Friday. And we all tell you to look forward. We are still going to do our regularly scheduled show, which we'll release on this Friday. But what a day it has been. Back in March, which seems like so long ago, given everything that's happened, the Ivy League were the first NCAA Division I conference to kind of become the harbinger of what was going to happen with college sports. The Ivy League were the first ones to cancel their men's and women's basketball tournaments. They immediately announced that they were not going to continue with spring sports season. And the dominoes all then begin to fall from there. After that, the Big Ten cancels their tournament, ACC, CAA, the SEC, Big 12, Pac-12. It all dominoed from there in terms of basketball, men's and women's side conference tournaments that hadn't been completed or hadn't started yet did not happen. Hockey season was rolling into conference playoffs. That blew up as well. And then eventually the biggest domino of all falling, the $630 million event that is the entirety of March Madness on the men's and women's side, gone. And we have sat since that day in mid-March with no college sports. As we began to think about reopening and coming towards that July moment, July 13th, that date on the calendar that NCAA football can begin to have mandatory practices with their players, with their teams, we were thinking and hoping that as we saw the curve begin to flatten, that we were going to be able to get these sports back, that we were going to be able to go back to having practices, to have the preseason games. But we then began to see other dominoes fall. And those dominoes that fell came to be conferences putting out restrictions on how your team was going to be able to play during the regular season, where you were going to be allowed to travel to, what distance you were going to be able to go in terms of playing non-conference games, how your conference structure was even going to happen. We have conferences where you essentially play everyone at least once in the season, whether it's home or away, especially if it's soccer. Basketball plays home and home against everybody. We still don't know what's happening with basketball season. That's been left kind of until later this month for us to figure out what's going to happen with that, because there is a bit of an overlap between when basketball season begins and the fall sports season. But the biggest domino of all leading into that July 13th date obviously is college football. The fall season is everything with college football, just as the winter season is everything with basketball, and the spring season for all intent and purpose can be said as everything with baseball and softball and the College World Series. You also have the track and field championships and lacrosse championships and all that in there, but we're talking about the biggest aspect of things, the biggest sports that you look at, which really are football in the fall, basketball in the winter, and then baseball, softball in the spring. And the other day, really just about like 2 days ago, the Centennial Conference, which is a very prestigious conference in terms of the names and numbers of schools that are in this conference. We're talking about, you know, Franklin and Marshall and Dickinson and Johns Hopkins and Susquehanna, Moravian. If you're in the Mid-Atlantic corridor, you know these schools very well, and you know both the academic aspect of these schools and then also the athletic aspect of these schools in Division III sports predominantly, and then some that the sport itself, just that sport particularly because of maybe number of teams overall in NCAA competes in Division I. Johns Hopkins men lacrosse, of course, is legendary. I mean, one of the perennial national championship competing programs in college lacrosse. I mean, the birthplace of lacrosse and college lacrosse itself. You go down to Johns Hopkins campus, and the National Lacrosse Hall of Fame and Museum is on the Johns Hopkins campus. So lacrosse and Johns Hopkins is synonymous. Division I lacrosse is synonymous. And so that makes it a little bit different. But for in terms of the rest of the teams in the Centennial Conference and Johns Hopkins and just about every other sport, they are Division III. And when the Centennial Conference said that they were going to cancel their fall season, it barely made a drip in the puddle. Like, you didn't even see a ripple. It was like, oh, that just happened. Okay. But then today, we get the proverbial big stone thrown into the puddle that made the splash and has created a ripple that is going to fan out not just today, but I think probably for days on end and probably for the next week to come as we see how this goes. And that was the Ivy League again. And the Ivy League today not only said no football season, not only said no fall sports, they said no fall sports until January 2021. That's it. We're done. We are done for the rest of this calendar year. Nothing until January 2021, which essentially eliminates the entirety of the fall season because we're through the bowl championship series by then. So if you're talking about no fall sports until January 2021, you are talking about there not being football season, no soccer season, no field hockey season, but we're now talking about affecting men's and women's basketball. We're talking about affecting indoor track and field. We're talking about affecting swimming and diving. We're talking about affecting wrestling. We're talking about affecting squash seasons, which in the Ivy League is massive. So you're talking about affecting rowing season, which of course, hey, Harvard crew, anybody? Like, we know where that goes. This was just massive. So what is this going to do? Not just in the FCS level, the old 1AA, but in the FBS level, what is this going to do across the board for all of the major schools? We're going to talk about this as we go through the rest of this special edition show. This is going to be an interesting day. We got a couple of special guests coming up, but just wanted to get you all up to date on how that goes. This was a special edition of the starting lineup. I know you were all looking for the usual lead-in that we have, but we kind of just went with it that way. We're going to take a quick break on the Sports Fan Base Network Rhode Island, pay some bills. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to this very special Wednesday edition of And That's the Game inside the Sports Fan Base Network Rhode Island Studios. Matt Jolas here on And That's the Game, presented by Anchor.fm. Of course, as I've mentioned, we are available on Spotify. We are on Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts. We have been picked up by so many different podcast networks over the past week since the series premiered, and it has been phenomenal. And we thank you so much to everybody who tuned in and listened to last week's episode. I've gotten so many comments on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. It's been absolutely awesome. And now for this special edition, I am very privileged and pleased to welcome into the show a fellow SFBN Rhode Island colleague, Nick LeBlanc. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So you and I have been, you know, texting as the day has gone on, chatting before we came on air here about the proverbial boulder dropped into the pond, as I said in my opening, that has created the massive ripple now, and that is the Ivy League crashing down not just the fall season, but all the way sports until January 2021.
It that's a big domino to fall. I mean, the Ivy League, you know, it's one of the smaller leagues in the NCAA. It's nothing like the SEC or the Big Ten, and none of those conferences. But the fact that you see a league like the Ivy League push all their sports now back, their fall sports really to the springtime, possibly. No, not now. You're a conference like SEC or the ACC. Now you're looking at that saying, "Oh, well, maybe we should probably do the same thing." And it affects a lot of these senior college athletes, too, who have ambitions on wanting to go pro. So this affects a lot of the football guys. The draft is in late April. Affects the basketball players who want to go to the NBA. That draft is in June. So it affects a lot of people here, especially the winter sports, because they start up right around the beginning of November.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that's really interesting to think about is – you know, of course, the Ivy League was the domino that brought down college sports back in the spring. In March, they were the very first ones to cancel their conference basketball tournaments for men's and women's. And then every major conference proceeded from there. The Big Ten the next day calls theirs. Then the ACC, the SEC goes down, the Big 12, and then the Pac-12. And eventually, about a week after that, we hear out of the NCAA headquarters that there is no March Madness. And, you know, we watch March and April go through without having the NCAA basketball season. But you brought up the interesting point that this not only impacts the fall, but because they're talking about not until January, this impacts also the winter as well. This is going to impact basketball season, and I think more specifically for some of the Ivy League schools, it impacts your men's and women's ice hockey seasons, which are huge in the Ivy League. The number of players that we do see come out of Dartmouth, out of Yale, out of Harvard, out of Cornell into the NHL. You know, we are talking about the possibility of what happens to the Beanpot tournament. You know, there is a massive impact that we haven't even begun to really decipher yet.
Yeah, you brought up, you know, the Beanpot, you know, the biggest tournament really in Boston for college hockey, because you've got BC, BU, Northeastern, and Harvard battling out for a trophy. You know, you're not even sure that's going to be able to go on as scheduled in mid-January as planned. Because these guys will probably just be getting going with their truncated seasons, and, you know, every point will matter. So to take, like, you know, a night or two off, you know, for a couple weeks to play a tournament, I don't know. I think the Beanpot might be in jeopardy next year.
Yeah, and of course, you know, the Beanpot plays in TD Garden, and we're going to kind of spin off this for the other aspect to it. With the Beanpot being played in TD Garden, the Bruins have still not completed their regular season yet. They have the 8 games and the Stanley Cup run to be. I was joking with someone earlier today that if we had gone through a 7-game Stanley Cup series in regular, we'd be hoisting the cup, you know, this week. Instead, we still have 8 games to play in a regular season set up, probably in Toronto. We haven't heard yet where that's going to be.
Toronto and Edmonton are the hubs.
They did confirm it.
It's confirmed, yep.
Okay, so we heard yesterday rumors that Toronto and Edmonton. So Toronto, and then you still got the whole playoff series to go. That's going to be, you know, that's going to be 16 wins to host Lord Stanley's Cup in the air.
I mean, it's not going to be an 8-game regular season for the Bruins. They're going to have a 3-game round robin, and then they'll go right into the traditional Stanley Cup playoffs. There'll also be a qualifying round, too. So we're going to get playoff hockey by August 1st. But this will affect the Beanpot, because next year, NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman said that they still anticipate on a full 82-game season. I don't know how the heck they're going to do that. I think he's talking out of his butt right now. But, you know, if that's the case, you could be seeing the Bruins probably playing, having to play 3 and 4 nights or 3 nights in a row. And, you know, it's going to be really hard to maneuver that, because if the Bruins are trying to play 82 games and you want to play the beanpot, shoe's going to drop here. And unfortunately, it's going to be the beanpot because the Bruins own the building.
Yeah, and you could say, okay, well, we move it and they play it at their home arenas or whatever. But then you're talking about the fact that the beanpot draws 18,000, 19,000. They pack TD Garden for every single game. If you put it into Northeastern, BU, Harvard, whoever's arena, that's only 8,000, 9,000 seats that you're getting. You know, these are not 18,000 seat buildings that, that's similar to what they play in TD Garden. But I think on the bigger aspect of this, and kind of back, of course, to the initial story that we're talking about, which is the Ivy League canceling all sports, not just for the fall season up through until January 2021, is that domino effect. When the Ivy League canceled in March, they took down all the rest of the major conferences. Now the interesting thing is going to be seeing, do the other major conferences, the Power Five, say, let's talk about ACC, SEC, Pac-12, Big Ten, the Power Five conferences, and we'll throw Notre Dame into the mix for all semblance of being on this. Do we see this being the catalyst moment that takes down all those conferences? Are we potentially looking at a fall with no college football?
Right now, it's a real possibility. As a sports fan, I really hope not, because, the weekend generally starts on a Friday night, and you're watching, the Red Sox play, and then you go to Saturday, you have college football. Then Sunday, you got the NFL. You take college football away and move that over to the spring, it just leaves a huge void right there, especially on the weekend, especially how you get how the ACC, SEC, Pac-12, they get the huge ratings. And they're the teams that have the 35,000, 40,000 seat stadiums. So you move all that out, move that from the fall to the spring, it'll hurt a lot of programs and a lot of schools financially, because a lot of these schools like Clemson, Alabama, Auburn, they feed off of the football teams.
Yeah, we already saw today Stanford, which of course Stanford football, we can talk, about how they fit sort of into that Pac-12 nature. Stanford cut 11 sports programs today, including their field hockey program, wrestling, tennis, rowing, men's and women's swimming and diving, and track and field and cross country. That is 20 Stanford national championships and over 4,000 alumni of Stanford who have competed on those teams over all the years, cut completely from the program. And it obviously is an effect point. And you talk about it, with Stanford cutting that back, where does that also leave the look at what does USC, UCLA, Cal eventually do?
Here's the thing. No one wants to be the first to do it. No, they rather follow someone else's lead. But when you are the first, you're being looked at, and now other schools will look at that, say, oh, maybe we should do the exact same thing. And unfortunately, with the time that we're living in, which is basically the apocalypse, it's what we have to do. We can't live under one set of rules for one state, and then another state lives under another set of rules. No, as right now, it has to be one size fits all. So if one league cancels, probably a lot of the other leagues have to cancel too, because it's not beneficiary for the Big Five in college sports to play their seasons, while a league like the Ivy League, they have to say no, we have to push everything back.
And the sort of like one shining nugget that sits on the outside of all of this, of course, is Notre Dame. And, of course, Boston and Notre Dame can go synonymous with each other, playing, Boston hosting games for Notre Dame at Fenway Park, when they played Boston College. So you have to look at this and you say Notre Dame plays in the ACC and every other sport except for football. But when Notre Dame plays football, it is Michigan, it is Wisconsin, it is Ohio State, it is Purdue, it is Oklahoma, it is Stanford, USC. You know, like, these are, it's not like saying, oh, Notre Dame's an independent school and plays slouches. Notre Dame is college football. I mean, they are as synonymous. You know, they can go 4 and whatever, and people still talk about Notre Dame every single day. So how is
the stadium's huge?
Yeah. So how is this going to affect? How is this going to really affect how the Power Five conferences maybe even look at it, knowing Notre Dame kind of controls their own destiny in this? If they say we don't have enough other schools that are playing, we go ahead and shut down.
It's going to come down to, I mean, if you have no one else to play, I mean, if you have no one to play in a schedule because all the teams that you face, they had to move their sports to the spring, you're not going to have any other choice either but to move your season to the spring. You know, it stinks for Notre Dame, you know, because, you know, all their other sports in the ACC, so they go under ACC rules. The football team's is under a different set. So, you know, for Notre Dame, you know, you're kind of in a tricky situation because all teams going to be looking at you saying, what do you want to do? Because if you're going to play your season, then we're going to have to play our seasons.
Yeah, and it's definitely going to be something that's going to – there's a lot of things that are just still – we don't know what's really going on. It's a bombshell kind of day, and it's just when you get days like this, it's where you kind of just want to say, okay, we got to talk this out. But you brought up a really interesting point, which is about the effect of the drafts. And both the NBA and the NFL have their drafts in April, May. The NHL draft follows very shortly thereafter. It usually, you know, as soon as the NHL season is normally completed in June, the draft follows immediately right there. We've seen how important the draft has been to getting players in for these teams. And we've seen even in the smaller leagues, I mean, hey, everybody in New England has constantly heard about Julian Edelman coming out of Kent State and Rex Burkhead out of the middle of nowhere and James White, you know, out of, like, you know, schools that everybody's like, where is that school from? You know, so, you know, we've seen it. You know, and how it comes out of players that have come into New England teams. How is this going to affect the way that not only the teams, their scouting departments, their player personnel departments look at future players, but how the coaching staffs are going to look at players that are currently on the roster and structuring contracts for next year? And are we going to potentially see players get squeezed out?
That's probably what's going to happen. You're going to see a lot of players get squeezed out. I mean, and these scouts, you know, they're going to – if college football is playing into the spring, say their season starts in February, like just a couple weeks after the NFL say the NFL season goes on, no issues. You just see the college football season start the Saturday after the Super Bowl. And so it'll give the scouts time to, you know, go to these schools and scout these players, while the college football season is probably being squinched in about a two and a half month span. So, no, the scouts will have a lot of work to do in a very short amount of time. These pro prospects, like Trevor Lawrence, for example, is projected to be the number one overall pick in 2021. He's going to have to play his butt off to really just get all these scouts to know him and say, hey, look, I am worth the number one overall pick. Watch me do it. This affects a lot of guys who are projected to go in the first round because they have all this talent and now their seasons are pushed back to the spring. It just leaves a cloud of uncertainty, you know. Depending on how long the season is, am I going to be able to do enough to still get drafted? And when will the season end? Will it be in time for the draft?
Yeah, and it's funny, and I say maybe this is why we work on the same network, because you actually read my mind. I was thinking about Trevor Lawrence right as you said Trevor Lawrence, because I'm just thinking about exactly, you know, Joe Burrow obviously goes number one this year, but his season was regular. Trevor Lawrence, what does he have to do this year to be able to prove himself? And interestingly, if they go into the college football playoffs and they have a shot at the national championship, does Trevor Lawrence play and then immediately have to turn around and go right into training camp? Because we've seen so many times where these guys, when they say, okay, I'm not in the CFP, I'm not in the four semifinal, I'm not in this the final four, I'm not in the semifinal games, I'm not in the championship, I'm just going to sit out my bowl game because I don't want to get injured. You can't sit your bowl game this year.
No, I mean, in the past, I didn't blame guys. You know, if you're not playing in, like, you know, a huge bowl game like the Rose Bowl or the Sugar Bowl or the there's too many bowls for me to remember. Just college football. I didn't do well college football classes. Year. Like, I'll be happy they cut those in half anyway. But, you know, I never blamed some of these college guys. You know, if they're not in the college football playoff, they're not in the major bowl game, They don't want to hurt their draft status by getting injured in probably what to them was a meaningless game. That's fine. You know, that's fine with me. If you're someone like Trevor Lawrence, you have to play in those games because they're considered playoff moments and big moments in a season. And scouts really look at that and say, okay, can this – all right, this guy did it in the regular season, but can he do it in a high-pressure playoff moment like the college football playoff is? And, you know, that's what they're going to be looking at. And with a lot of these guys, you know, is the high-profile bowls and the college football playoffs that these guys really, really look at to see your mental toughness.
Yeah, absolutely. Just absolutely insane, crazy day. Not at all what we expected the day to be. Joined on a very special edition of And That's the Game on the Sports Fan Base Network, Rhode Island, by Nick LeBlanc. Thank you so much for being a part of our interview. I'm going to keep you here, actually, because we are going to go into just kind of flow in. This show is all kind of different. So we're going to flow right into what we normally do is our third segment of the show, which is called Final Buzzer. And so for topic one on Final Buzzer today, Red Sox schedule came out. Finally, we have a Red Sox schedule. They're going to open at home on July 24th against the Baltimore Orioles. July brings them three games against the Orioles, four games against the New York Mets, and then finally we get the dreaded New York Yankees. What are you looking for out of the Red Sox season?
Under a normal 162-game schedule going into this year, not much, frankly, after the offseason trade of Mookie Betts and David Price. But now that the season's been shortened by 102 games, I expect the Red Sox to really make a shot at it. You know, Eduardo Rodriguez, he's coming off of a 19-win season. You're going to have a healthy Nathan Eovaldi. Right now, this is Xander Bogaerts' team, and him and Devers can lead the charge. JD's going to do JD things. You hope that Jackie Bradley Jr. and Andrew Benintendi can have fast starts to the season, especially for Bradley, with this being a contract year for him, he can hit the market in the winter. So I'm not expecting much, but I do expect the Red Sox to compete and maybe fight for a playoff spot.
Yeah, I do like the fact that because of the short, and you mentioned 102 games eliminated from the season, we're playing 60, we're playing super fast. We play literally every single day. There's about a two-week – there's two times during the season where there's two-week spans where they don't have a day off. They play every day for, you know, for 2 weeks, and it happens. But I also like the fact that maybe there's a chance to pad the record here because we've got games against – the Phillies, we've got games against the Marlins, we've got games against the Atlanta Braves, which we're kind of really unsure, you know, what the Braves are going to be. Are the Tampa Bay Rays going to be where they normally are? And then, of course, I mean, the Baltimore Orioles, the number of times that we play, it's like, hey, we have three games against the Orioles to start the season off. We don't see them again until the end of August, but we see them for three games at the end of August. And then I think it's another three games set right in the last week of the season before they close it up with three games against the Atlanta Braves. the season ends September 27th and you go into the playoffs. I said last week on my show, if the Sox through the first 20 games can get 12 to 15 wins out of the first 20, and you've got the Orioles, the Mets, the Yankees, the Tampa Bay Rays, and the Toronto Blue Jays, if they can get 12 to 15 wins out of those games, I think they can make the playoffs.
Yeah, and really, that's the important part for them. You know, it's a 60-game sprint instead of a marathon like it normally is. So the first 20 games of the season are really going to tell a lot for the Red Sox whether they're going to be contenders or they're going to be selling guys like J.D. Martinez or J.D. Bradley Jr. or even Rodriguez at the August 31st trade deadline. So the first 20 games are going to mean a lot for the Red Sox. If they go 10-10 in them, you know, you're in a decent spot. If you go, say, 5-15 the first 20, you're out of it.
Yeah, and no minor league season. No Pawtucket, no Portland, no Salem. So you do have a little bit more room on the roster. You have an expanded roster, but you also have some interesting things that come into play in this. You know, Ruzny Castillo's contract comes up at the end of this season. He's not going to play in Pawtucket because there is no Pawtucket this year. Do you bring him into Boston and see what he can do? Do you keep up a Yoan Ibar, a Darwin Hernandez? You know, that trade produced Colton Brewer. You know, it's like, are we going to see some interesting named players in the beginning of the season?
I think so. Yeah, you brought up a good one, Ruzny Castillo. Poor guy's been stuck in the minors throughout his entire career. He's the highest paid. He's the highest paid minor leaguer, for crying out loud, being paid $17.5 million to sit down in AAA and enjoy himself. So yeah, you know, I think now would be a good time for them to bring up Ruzny Castillo. I think he should have been up here a couple of years ago, frankly, because of salary reasons, I guess. They've been unable to bring him up because of the new luxury tax. So I think now would be a good chance to see what you have in a guy, because he's right now your most viable trade piece. Is a team like maybe Pittsburgh or Baltimore or Miami, they could use a guy like him on their roster right now. Speed guy, has a good bat. His defensive capabilities are pretty good as well. So, you know, you want to have him play in games and use him as trade bait to, because if you're in it, use him as trade bait to get yourself a bullpen piece or a starter, you know, with maybe a year or two left on his current deal. So I think, you know, the Red Sox have an interesting decision to make with Ruzny Castillo, because if he doesn't see a field this year, which is also a possibility as well, now he loses a year, and that really hurts him on the free agent market.
Boston Celtics go to the bubble in Orlando. Do the Celtics stand a chance to be able to not only make the playoffs, but do they make the NBA Finals?
Thankfully for the Celtics' sake, before the season pause, they did clinch a spot, which is great for them. I think they do have a chance. You know, under normal circumstances, if they had to go to a Milwaukee or Toronto, they would have been slapped right across the face and laughed out of the playoffs after a round one victory over, say, Brooklyn or Philly. So, no, I really do think the Celtics have a legit chance. I mean, no, there's no home court. It's all neutral site. And, you know, the Celtics have great players in Jaylen Brown, Kemba Walker, Jason Tatum is probably the face of the franchise right now. Gordon Hayward, he seems healthy. Cantor, he's been huge for all season, gaining a lot of offensive and defensive rebounds. So I think the Celtics do have a chance. I still think the biggest hurdle in their way is Milwaukee. I still think, you know, Milwaukee could knock them out, whether you face Milwaukee in the second round or even the conference final. Milwaukee's still a big hurdle, but I think the Celtics could actually clear that, because you won't have a crowd, no home court, it's all neutral site. So I think the Celtics will have a legit chance.
Tatum, 23.6 points per game. Kemba Walker, 21.2 points per game. Jaylen Brown, 20.4 points per game when the season paused. So that really shows final buzzer. Washington Wizards, yes or no?
No. No shot. No shot.
I have heard so many people go back and forth over this one, and I think the only people that really want to see the Washington Wizards somehow make a Cinderella run are the people who actually live in Washington themselves.
I love that the teams, and I see Washington, and they're like 5.5 hours. Like, why are you here? Why are you there?
You should have just stayed home.
You made the same case for the Suns and the Trailblazers. Like, what are you doing here? No need for you to be here.
you could have just stayed home. Nick LeBlanc, thanks for joining in tonight on this special edition of And That's the Game, and we'll definitely see you soon.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me.
Take care, man.
You too.
All right.
What's up, everybody? It's Matthew Jules from And That's the Game. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you on many platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, and more. You can also make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast all in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm today to get started. All right, that's it. That's all she wrote, folks. Thanks for tuning in to this special edition of And That's the Game on Sports Fan Base Network Rhode Island, presented by Anchor.fm. Special thanks to my guest, Nick LeBlanc. We will see you all Friday for our regular episode, Season 1, Episode 2 of And That's the Game, presented by Anchor.fm, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, anywhere you can possibly get a podcast, and of course, check us all out at Sports Fan Base Network Rhode Island. That's sfbn-rhodeisland.com for all your breaking news from not only the New England region, but all across the sports world. I'm Matt Jealous. See y'all in a couple of days.